My name's Bonnie Flores. I'm an independent journalist in New Zealand, and I was introduced to an insider who had some concerns about what was going on at Stats NZ, which is our official statistics agency. And based on what he said, we worked on some Official Information Act requests to sort of flush out what was going on. But what it turned out was that Stats NZ has been busy creating a sort of everything database. They call it a integrated data system or a statistical register, which is what it's called in those kind of the jargon, I suppose. But essentially, it's an everything database. I mean, it's not unusual for government agencies to collect data on us, and they all do that. But essentially what it's doing is it's going to be linking all of these agencies' data, and it's then going to be moving from moments in time, updates, you know, refreshes that happen maybe three or four times a year traditionally, where the new information is loaded in, to real-time updates of all our data across government agencies in real time. So they're linking not only population register, which they're upgrading at the moment, but they're also linking business registers and location registers. So they're sort of developing a kind of 360 real-time vision of the entire population, anyone born in the country or who's become a citizen. And they're, on top of that, they're going to, or they are, they're sort of, it's hard to say how far through the project they are, but they're some way through, at least half, I would say. They're creating what they call a persistent unique identifier. So, I mean, every government agency would have an anonymized identifier for the information it holds on a person, but this would be one identifier that follows you and tracks you, the individual, over time, from birth to death, potentially. Well, that would be the idea. That's what it would be capable of doing. It is, in theory, anonymized, as all sort of, you know, government statistics should be. But people I spoke to said that, you know, it doesn't take much with large language models to identify a person with really just a few data points. So it's hard to see how privacy is respected.
Maybe we could talk about privacy in a minute, but first, the first question is why? Why do they need this?
Well, what they say it's for is research and statistical purposes. But they already gathered statistical data through census. And the research, so that's how they're selling it. Use cases for various agencies to do planning, projections, and for academics with the correct authorization. It's a very powerful database, so researchers that are allowed to use it, you know, they relish that. Even my insider said she thought the data was amazing, but, you know, she was worried about what could be done with it.
Now, the Roman Empire did censuses. The Nazis did censuses, and particularly in the 1930s, the concern should be that this information can be abused by a new government, a new regime that decides to weaponize it against people. Say, for example, if you you put down that you were Jewish in the 1930s, at the beginning of the Nazi era, You might think nothing of it, but then you found that the SS were banging on your door, the Gestapo. So are there any kind of guarantees that this is not going to be abused by governments? And also, of course, you know, this information, there's a whole industry out there called the data mining industry, which steals this information and then sells it on.
Yeah. No, there are no guarantees. One of the things I've had trouble establishing is the legality of it. I put questions to Stats NZ because there are two government acts that are involved. There's the Privacy Act, and then there is the Data and Statistics Act 2022, which is a newer version of the the older Statistics Act, but granting a lot more data acquisition powers to the chief statistician. And no, it doesn't. Stats couldn't tell me very quickly and in plain language which parts, which clauses of the Privacy Act and the Data and Statistics Act made what it was doing legal. We all know about the IDI, the original research database, but this upgrade and this linking of other databases together and then the move into real time is not something that it has been transparent or upfront about. It has not front-footed this with a public relations campaign or an information campaign to let people know that's what it's doing and seek at least a bit of social license. So, no, I can't see that there are guarantees. Even my questions to the Privacy Commissioner were sort of fobbed off, but the Privacy Commissioner is, you know, notoriously underfunded and overworked, and, you know, that's possibly on purpose. So I can't see where the protections are. Even the privacy law expert I spoke to wasn't sure about the legality. No one has been able to tell me how it's legal. So I don't think anyone's in a position to tell me how it's also protective of people's privacy rights.
Well, look, you've dropped a little bombshell there, which is that there hasn't been a publicity campaign, because obviously this is a massive infringement on people's privacy. Surely there's a raging national debate about it.
you would think so, Tony. It's flown under the radar since it dropped. There is no discussion now. And actually, I interviewed a former chief statistician who was chief statistician in the 90s, and he was pretty appalled at the goings-on at StatsNZ, and one of his main criticisms was its lack of transparency. Even reviews that it has done into failed censuses and things that are, you know, unpublished months or years later, which, you know, the way he characterised his role when he was, you know, the chief statistician, was that the public trust was basically the basis for that role, and without it, and without the confidence of the minister, there wasn't really any statutory basis for the role. You know, that's what it relies on, and we seem to be moving away from that. Yeah,
I would have thought that there would have to be some purpose that the New Zealand government would use in order to convince people this is a good idea. It's obviously going to leak out one way or another. What are they saying? Have they said anything about why this is going to be such a great thing for New Zealanders?
Really, only what I, there's another aspect I'll get onto, but the main justifications, as I said earlier, were, you know, it's research capabilities and for statistical purposes.
How does that translate into something which is of use to any individual in New Zealand? I mean, there must be some... You've got to be able to say to people, this is the sort of thing that this database will do for you.
Yeah, no, they haven't come out with sort of use cases to the public yet. I imagine they're crafting, you know, specific ones to sell it into various, you know, research sectors. But they haven't. They are selling it at, well, actually, they're not selling it. Another one of the things that the investigation threw up, we've been told we're moving to a censusless census. So one of the reasons they want to do this is so they can have all the data at their fingertips without actually having to do a population survey. We do them every 5 years in New Zealand. I think they're every decade in the UK. And they are usually, you know, overseen by enumerators, and every person and every household has to have the form, and it's a tightly run ship. They're proposing to do away with this, and so that's one of the things I think they will be coming out and trying to sell to the public, that, hey, this is great, we don't have to do a population survey anymore. I know that when they announced a year ago that they would be moving to a censusless census, or what they call an admin first census, meaning administration data first, that they are going to do another consultation, which according to many of the documents I saw would be about now. They planned to do it in the first half of this year, but we've heard nothing. But apparently our first censusless census will be in 2028, so it's not that far away. Len Cook, the former statistician I interviewed, was not convinced that this approach would garner the kind of the quality of data that would be required for proper statistical purposes.
How has this gone down in New Zealand for those people that have come across it?
Actually, a lot of apathetic responses, to be honest. What has happened, Tony, in the interim, it dropped at Easter, but just 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago, the government announced it was intending to implement a social media ban for under 16s. And this has sparked a debate about it being a backdoor to digital identity, which, I mean, I think this whole plan of StatsNZ is definitely going to be linked in some way to the digital identity framework. I haven't investigated that yet. So that is bringing more awareness to this idea about, having to prove your age online, how you might do that. They don't appear to be aware of the dangers of. I was quite shocked. I thought it would sort of, take off, go like wildfire. Most people have ignored it, and comments that I've seen have been largely along the lines of, "Well, this sounds like it might be quite a good idea and make life rather easy."
Oh God!
So not the kind of response I'd hoped for.
No. People need to be aware of the dangers of being. I mean, what about banks? This is one of the very obvious things that could be linked to such a database. So, it's giving your location, everything you're spending your money on. There's also all this talk about programmable money in the future, which is electronic money that you can only spend on certain things depending on who you are. So is that linked in with this database at all, your spending history?
I think it will be. I don't think it is yet, but we do have, I've verified recordings from inside the agency with a former chief executive in a large webinar attended by several hundred staff, talked about the desire to collect telecoms data, banking data, and supermarket data. And, they already collect supermarket data for their cost of living indexes and their inflation. So it can't be this data they already collect. I imagine what they mean is loyalty card data, which does, it's a lot more personal. That's the danger. And as I mentioned before, this data and statistics bill gives the chief statistician the power to acquire all kinds of information, not only from government agencies and ministries, but from NGOs and information outside of government. This is one of the major criticisms of it. And not only does it give the agency or the chief statistician the power to acquire that, and they would be legally obliged to supply it, it also gives the chief statistician the power to delegate the authority to gather statistical data to anyone. So, it's a massive watering down of what used to be a very important government role. I think the plan would absolutely be to add that in time.
Right.
We kind of know they've got their eyeing up on it. They would never come and say that.
No. You're in the same part of the world-ish as China. This sort of reminds me a little bit of the social credit system the Chinese have got, where citizens get scored on how loyal to the great president they are. And, this sounds like a kind of a similar system, really, although we're supposed to be opposed to the Chinese. Sounds to me like we're going down the same road.
Well, that's the big worry, isn't it? The big worry is that it isn't just used for research and statistical purposes, but that it will then be used as a compliance and or enforcement tool. The Privacy Commissioner, in his submission on the Data and Statistics Bill, did raise that point and said there was no clause within the Act that specifically prevented that or, explicitly said it should not be used in that way. Our government last year told us it wants us to move away from traditional road user taxes to put tracking devices in every vehicle so that it can charge individuals directly for their road use charge. you know, you can see the enforcement possibilities. If such as, say, your road user data was also supplied to Stats NZ, we know crime data has been supplied to Stats NZ. They've already mapped the possible crime that you may be either subject to or likely to commit using the prototype of the database that this whole big everything database is being built on. So, you know, I think they've demonstrated already that it has the potential for great abuse. But it's a bit hard to make a fuss about it when the Privacy Commissioner isn't even making a fuss about it and doesn't even seem to be able to tell me how it's legal. I don't know how it is in the UK, but we have privacy impact assessments, which are lauded as sort of good practice. Every time new data is added to this database, the Privacy Commissioner has to, you know, issue a privacy impact assessment. But they kind of read often like just, I don't know, a blow-off. Do you know what I mean? It's not like you don't get the impression the Privacy Commissioner is really shouting for the rooftops defending people's privacy. There's justifications and, you know, technical reasons why it is protected.
Well, I mean, it sounds to me like what I would call a nothing burger, really. Just there is something there that is supposed to be some checks and balances. But anyway, what about the time frame? When is this all kicking in, and how far have they got down the road to this being fully implemented?
Well, they're quite far down the road, Tony. I mean, 2028 is meant to be our first census. I think they've been working on this statistical database, this real-time database, for at least a couple of years. I know they've already linked the location and business database, and as soon as the population database is upgraded, it's not currently fit for purpose, but they're working on that. Once the population database is up to scratch, they'll link that up, and I imagine that would be in the next year. Who knows, you know, when they're going to start talking about it publicly. But so far, all the questions I've put to Stats haven't been answered. They're being treated as Official Information Act requests, which, you know, gives them 21 days to do it. They just renewed that. You know, I put questions to them, for example, like how many breaches have already happened. You know, we should have an idea of what's the security like. You know, have powers under the Act been delegated? If so, what for? And the most important question, please tell me simply how it's legal. Do you think that it's reasonable for a government agency to take, you know, potentially 60 days to tell me how a major project it's doing is legal? I find it very odd.
No, it is. So Palantir comes to mind. This is exactly what they do. They're working with the Israeli military, for example, and the Ukrainian military to control drones, to kill people. And there's a military aspect. I would imagine that if the military say for national security we need this information, it would just simply be handed to them. So I wonder, you know, has Palantir come into your mind at all as you've been looking at all this?
Well, absolutely. I googled them yesterday to find out if they were registered in our company's office, which is like your company's house, I suppose. And they have been registered here since 2012. I suspect if they are working with our government or with our corporations, that they'd be doing so through subsidiaries. I'm not aware of any major initiatives that they're involved with, but it's certainly on my radar in terms of things that I would like to find out. So, you know, OAA's forthcoming.
yeah, because this seems to me an extremely dangerous international company, which is, as I was hinting earlier, you know, is going out there deliberately stealing data, and if they can manage to use the excuse of national security, they will definitely do that. So anyway, look, Bonnie, you're hinting that you've already been writing about this. Where can people pick up on that and follow your work?
You can find this investigation at Byline Babylon or Bonnie Flores at Substack. Same thing, should get you there. That's where you'll find it, and I'm not really active on the social media, but if you sign up to my Substack, I'll keep you posted.
Can you just spell your name for us so people can find that easily?
Yep, it's Bonnie Flaws, B-O-N-N-I-E, Flaws, F-L-A-W-S, and the Substack is called Byline Babylon.
Okay, Bonnie, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.